The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
And now, it's time for Radio Jobline with your host, Scott Possessor, right here on 103.9 LI News Radio.
Welcome, everybody. If you have not heard this show before, we're on for you every Saturday from 2 to 3 p.m. Our job is to get you a job, get you a better job, be more compelling on your job, make you a better salesperson, make you a more engaged employee. We discuss workplace issues, everything from sexual harassment to how to handle an active shooter situation, what's going on in the world. You've got to be prepared. We also talk about technology a lot on this program. We talk about small business. We actually have employers come on the show sometimes and give jobs. I think that's coming up next week. We have that Culinary Institute coming on. But today we're going to talk about something different. Cybersecurity really is how we're going to start today, but we're going to also be talking about the IT careers that are hot in today's job market. And we have a real expert with us by the name of Frank Zingini. I'll tell you all about Frank in just a minute. But first, I want to introduce, drum roll please.
I don't have a drum.
I want to introduce Danielle Scott.
Yeah.
Right? How could I forget the last name, Scott?
Yeah.
and it sounds like a radio name. Mm-hmm. Doesn't it, Danielle?
Yeah,
Scott?
It does.
Danielle is our new intern, so welcome, Danielle.
Thank you.
We so appreciate having you here. You have not only come to our rescue because we had our other intern had to leave to go back to Penn State so we could graduate, and so you've taken over for him and will be filling in for us the entire fall semester,
yep,
which is fantastic. So we're looking forward to a long and successful relationship. Tell us a little bit about what your aspirations are, how you found the internship, and so on.
Well, I am interested in radio, and I love pop culture and sports and things like that. And I was looking for an internship that I could be hands-on, just like as this one. Mm-hmm. So I was looking, and I actually contacted you in May, and you had filled the position. So then I contacted you again, and then I it's right time.
So let's tell everybody about that story, because that's a nice story. So here's what happened, folks. We lost Evan Roberts, our previous intern, mm-hmm, in the middle of his internship. So I'm kind of like, well, I might as well wait a few weeks and then get a fall intern, and I'll do it myself until then. But I had told Danielle when I spoke to her in May to call me at the beginning of August, and I forgot that I told you to do that.
Yeah.
So now I'm sitting here internless, and the phone rings, and it's you.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was Johnny on the spot, right place, right time, and that's why you got the nod.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're very, very happy to have you here, Danielle.
I'm excited to be here.
All right. Now, you got a couple of pieces of business for us. So the first thing you did is you have a commercial.
Yeah.
Right? Why don't we start with that? Let's let the listeners hear why we picked you up.
Okay. BizShout. Socially promote yourself or your business is a new promotional platform that is free. The business casual culture fits in between Facebook and LinkedIn, where users can socialize and promote iconic shouts on their creativity and business. For their first service, members can build a creative resume, which is a free portfolio that blends information and rich content to storytell a candidate's expertise and share chemistry. They are designed for forward-thinking brands who approach hiring through modern marketing. Anyone interested in joining BizShout can do so at BizShout.com, spelled with two Z's.
Terrific. What do you think?
I think I'm going to go sign up right now.
All right, let's give a round of applause, Joe.
All right.
Thanks.
All right. All right, we're all clapping. So great job. And now let's get a little bit to today's show, which is all about technology and cybersecurity. When I had lunch or breakfast with Frank Zingini a couple of months back, and we decided to have him on the show because he's so smart and knows so many things. and he's done so much with the company that he owns and so on. But tell us a little bit about some of the research you conducted on cybersecurity, because cybersecurity is affecting not a few people, not a lot of people, an enormous amount of people, a number so high you can barely count them. Give us a couple of examples.
Yeah. While I was researching, I found a lot of very big companies that many people are part of that have got their data hacked in the last few years. One of the top ones was JP Morgan Chase in July 2014. It is the largest bank in the nation, and it was and their data was compromised. More than 76 million people's information was stolen. Also, at Home Depot, in September of 2014, theft of credit and debit card information of 56 million customers was stolen. Also, in eBay, in May 2014, 145 million users' information was compromised.
So that's just 1 year, 2014.
Yeah, it's just 2014.
Now, something just happened at Capital One.
Yep.
Right? Do you have any data on that?
It's actually getting bigger by the day. I don't have the numbers at my fingertips. I want to say it was over 100 million data records.
I was going to say 100 million.
But what came out today was that as they've been investigating that, the person who perpetrated that had apparently also breached the data of another 30 companies that have yet to be named.
Wow.
This is what happens when one of these things occurs is they do a forensic analysis of what happened and they learn more and more and more as they go on.
All right. You may be wondering, whose voice is that? Okay. I have not yet introduced him. He's a wonderful man. His name is Frank Zingini. Frank is a native Long Islander, having grown up in Northport. I lived in there for 24 years.
Great town.
And received degrees in engineering and computer science at Stony Brook University. After working at a couple of local engineering companies, Frank founded a software engineering and consulting firm to help businesses and government build complex software products and systems. His company, Applied Visions, builds software products and systems for a variety of industries, including transportation and logistics, health and fitness, medical devices, consumer products, and more. Over the years, AVI has expanded with businesses that focus on cybersecurity, R&D for the government, application security management products for securing internet applications, and device-level embedded systems engineering. From the cloud to mobile devices and down to the Internet of Things, AVI and its related businesses help transform businesses for the digital era. Was that supposed to be Internet of Things?
No, Internet of Things.
Okay, because I had it spelled wrong here.
That's okay.
All right.
We're going to put that up on BizShout right after the show.
Put it on BizShout. There you go. So, Frank, welcome.
Thank you.
Have you been on the show before?
I have not. This is a first for me, just like Danielle.
All right. So welcome. You're a wonderfully intelligent guy, and all of our conversations always go so well, and they're so interesting.
I have you
on the show.
I'm happy to be here.
So, I think, we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about cybersecurity.
Sure.
I had the experience of working for a company called Total Defense.
Mm-hmm.
Which was CA Technologies Internet Security Software.
I remember it.
And, the problem is it didn't really work well and you couldn't uninstall it. But other than that, it was fine. And the company went up in flames when they left CA. But I learned a lot about what a virus is, what the various ramifications are of different types of malware. And I mean, you could go nuts reading it, make you nervous, just reading a story about it. So maybe just kind of frame it out for us. How big of a problem is this?
It's, first of all, the topic of cybersecurity is a mile wide. There's very broad flavors of it. The product you're talking about was antivirus. It was about protecting your local computer. The problems that Danielle just read about were application attacks on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
It's extremely broad. The challenge is huge. The risks are very high. And most of us don't really appreciate it or understand it. We just very trustingly give our data over to an awful lot of companies and websites and so forth and just hope that it's all being cared for. But it's a very, very big challenge.
Mm. One of these days I hope I'm wrong, but one of these days we're going to find out a big breach at Amazon and everybody has Amazon. I mean, who doesn't have some information on Amazon?
Yeah, I tend to try. There is so much risk to companies like Amazon that they pour an enormous amount of resource into protecting their data.
And that's some of the things we're going to be talking about today is the jobs that those people have that control that flow of information.
Yep. And really what it boils down to is a company's willingness to invest in the security of their data.
Right. And now, let's talk about this. So let's say it's a fairly small business, Frank.
Mm-hmm.
20 people. You know, what sort of, obviously you got a little virus protection, you got your servers are backed up, you got ghosting. What else can you do?
There's network protections that you must have.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to have internet connections, you've got to have the appropriate hardware in place. And you've really got to work with a professional service provider to do that. That's not something that any small business wants to try and do on its own.
So a small business can't just go out, buy a little package of software and pop it in and they're done.
let's clarify that a bit. One of the things you have to do with any business is understand what your actual threat is. We call this threat modeling. Mm-hmm. If you're a small business that doesn't have an internet presence or maybe just has an informational website, you don't have a very high threat. Mm-hmm. You're not exposing anything to the internet. There may be other ways that people could penetrate you, but they're probably not going to because you're probably not a very tempting target. Mm-hmm. If you are a business that has an internet presence, if you've put up a web store or if you put up some sort of a web application that lets people do self-service and get information about their accounts with you or anything like that, you've now cracked open a door and welcomed people in to do business with you. You're also welcoming in attackers. Mm-hmm. So you have to understand what your threats are. And there's a world of ways that you can deal with these things, that you can mitigate them. One beneficial thing nowadays is you can work with companies like Amazon or like Microsoft with their cloud hosting services where you rely on them to secure everything for you.
You know, that's something we should talk about because I'm not comfortable with that either. In other words, there are no good solutions is really what I'm trying to say. I don't want to give my data to a particular company and because that company could have a freakish, nightmarish breach.
Okay, life is full of risks. We make risk-based decisions every day. Mm-hmm. You get in your car, you drive to work, it's a risk-based decision. Mm. If you have made the decision to do business on the internet, you have taken on the responsibility to secure that. Mm. If your choice is between trusting a company like Amazon or Microsoft or Google or Rackspace or any of the other very large, very capable cloud service providers who invest countless resources in security, or to trust yourself or your one IT person or a small IT company in the neighborhood that you're using, you're way better off trusting the big guys. They have so much more at risk than you do. The odds are in your favor mm-hmm. that you're going to be more secure in the cloud than you might be on your own server in your own basement.
Becoming increasingly affordable then
yes.
for a company, a small business to be able to get on the cloud. You can do it on your phone. Yep. You know, Verizon's constantly asking me if I want to be in their cloud. Mm-hmm. So I probably have to pay for it, so I say no.
Yes. But if, in terms of hosting a business, if you want to be on the internet doing business, and that's really what we're talking about mm-hmm. here, because it's businesses that are exposing data that's potentially at risk, it's going to cost you something to be in the cloud.
Right.
But it is extremely affordable to be in the cloud as opposed to doing it all yourself. In the first wave of the internet, we all had to put servers in our data rooms and, you know, run a fiber optic cable to the building and serve our customers from there. You're better off doing it from the cloud.
So that's for small businesses. Mm-hmm. Now let's talk about a middle-sized business with 100-plus employees. Mm-hmm. Okay, what sort of risk is involved there and what sort of steps need to be taken there?
Well, all sorts of other risks emerge as you grow. One of the less frequently talked about, but very common attack vectors into a company is through the usually inadvertent misdeeds of the people who work there. Mm-hmm. You get an email from somebody you know that says, hey, you might be in this video, click this link. Mm-hmm. And you don't think about it. You click the link to see the video. Mm-hmm. And what you've really done is you've just installed a piece of malware onto your company's network.
Right.
We could go on at great length about those sorts of risks.
But let me just ask this one question. Sure. Once you've done that, you don't just expose yourself. You're exposing the entire company.
Yes. Yes. If you've implanted malware onto your network, you've exposed the entire company.
I have a cute story. I'm just going to do a sidebar. When I was working at a company called ISG, Integrated Systems mm-hmm. Group, one of the first big network integrators here on Long Island, great company. Bob Cagnozzi was the president. And I was running a staffing operation there. And one day I opened an email, and it happened to be the love bug virus. You remember the love bug?
I remember.
And I was the one that caused the entire company to go down.
Well done.
People were watching my computer, and it was mounting. It was building. All these people were being contacted, thousands and thousands of people. And I couldn't stop it. So I thought, let me pull the plug. That was the only thing I could think of, and I don't know. I didn't pull it fast enough. It did work. Pulling the plug worked to stop the virus, but I already had it now. Yeah. So they had to cleanse the entire company, everyone's workstation, every server, every computer, everything, all because I clicked a link.
Yep.
So basically, I will not click a link. If I don't recognize a link, or the logic for clicking that link, I will not click on it.
That is very wise. If you get an, I tell this to everybody I have any connection to, if you get an email with a link in it that does not have enough words to convince you that this is a legitimate email from a person that you know, do not click the link. If you wonder, call them up and ask them if they sent that to you, right, but do not click the link.
Now, let's talk about, the other thing we used to talk about a lot at Total Defense was social engineering. Mm-hmm. So we would get emails that looked so legitimate, like they were coming from, for example, American Express.
Yep.
You know, so we just wanted to thank you for this or that. We've had a data breach. We're asking everybody to change their password. Click here to enter your new password. And you know, people will fall for that because they think they're already part of a data breach. So these socially engineered emails are very dangerous because they appeal to the weaknesses that everybody has.
They do,
and they're very hard to resist.
They are. There's, like any industry, everybody likes to make up cool names for things, and we call those spear phishing emails. So there's phishing emails that are the general purpose ones that, you know, say here's an advertisement for some product, and spear phishing is one that's targeted right to you, Scott Possessor. Mm-hmm. It's got enough words in it that seems like it's a legit, that somebody knows you, and maybe they've decorated it to look like the Chase Bank emails.
Easy enough to get the logo, the Chase logo. Easy enough to get the real phone number of Chase. You know, there's a lot of things that can make it look even more convincing.
Yep. And there's ways of sniffing them out, but they're not the kinds of things that your ordinary computer user should even understand how to do.
Right.
So you just have to be unbearably careful.
Unbearably careful
with these things.
No attachments.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So we're not just going to talk about cybersecurity, but I am fascinated by it.
Yeah.
The other question I want to ask you too is, how is it going? Are we making any progress in this war? Are we losing the war? Are we winning the war?
Yeah. I'm not so much sure I would call it a war, but we are making tremendous progress with the problem.
Mm-hmm.
The very fact that you could just, Danielle, I'm pointing to Danielle, could read off a list of highly publicized events is itself a positive sign. It means the problem is getting the attention that it's deserved, and it's getting exposed to the people so they understand the risks. It also helps, let's say, encourage other businesses to make the investment in securing their products. There was a period of time where people just thought, well, we won't get attacked, and if we do, we'll just deal with it. With the scale and scope of these things happening and the unbelievable expense associated with recovering from it, companies are starting to realize that an investment in cybersecurity across all the different areas that it touches is actually justifiable because of the depth of the risk. And that's creating some of the jobs that you've talked about in dealing with the problem.
Right.
And there are many, and it covers a wide variety of slices of the domain. So yes, are we winning? I don't know if it's ever winnable. Are we making progress? We're making tremendous progress because we're dealing with the problem.
Are we stopping some of these breaches?
Oh, constantly.
Yeah?
Constantly.
Okay.
I mean, you never hear about the ones that get stopped.
Right.
But they're being
blocked
constantly.
So many more
constantly.
Are getting stopped.
It's relentless.
Relentless.
It's relentless.
Right.
If you ever want to have fun, take a computer you don't care about, hook it up directly to your house's internet connection without having the firewall or the router in between it and see what happens. It will be attacked within an hour because there's just constant scanning going on looking for vulnerable computers.
Right. Unbelievable.
So,
I know in the aerospace industry and in some of the high-tech industries where security, data security, is really, really, really important. They don't want to lose the battle plans for the Death Star, or whatever it might be.
But you know what? They have.
I'm sure they have.
I mean,
and I kind of wonder who has our stealth bombers and, who's got all that technology.
There have been highly publicized cases. I believe it was China or North Korea. I forget, but technical details of the F-35 fighter, I believe it was China, were pulled out of Lockheed Martin, and that's publicized. That's not even stuff that's secret.
Wow. So nobody knows the secret stuff we've lost.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So talk to us. We only have a minute left before we go to commercial. Is there something that people, one pet peeve that you have that people could do, Frank, to make this a little better? The one that bothers me is people don't update their computers enough. The Windows does these updates.
Yeah, that's gotten automatic. In fact, just today there was a major one announced that required an immediate update. just, I guess, the one thing, if people would just be more aware of it and accept it as a risk. Mm-hmm. And that's a broad statement, but both from a personal behavior level, like keeping things updated, like not clicking on links, to a large-scale corporate level of recognizing that you've got to invest in securing your systems and your applications, just be aware of the risk.
Okay. All right. That's good advice. You're listening to Radio Jobline with my new intern, Danielle Scott, who's done a fantastic job, came up with some great research for us today, and also found Frank and got it together to get him on the show today.
Well done, Danielle.
And we're talking to Frank Zangidi, a native Long Islander, grew up in Northport, received degrees in engineering and computer science, and he's now, are you the president of Applied Visions?
Yes.
The president of Applied Visions, a terrific technology company here in Long Island. We're going to talk about cybersecurity, but also we're going to get into some new career paths in the IT field that you should be aware of, caused by things like cybersecurity and the need for cybersecurity. If you have an idea for Radio Jobline, you can write to me, scottp118@gmail.com, scottp118@gmail.com. I'll be happy to have your idea on the show. We'll get routed through Danielle. She'll coordinate it, and we'll get you on the program. And but again, we're always looking for ideas, so feel free to write to me about anything, technology or otherwise. We have a news break coming up in a few seconds. Stay with us. Right after the break, we'll get back to technology.
And now, welcome back to Radio Jobline with your host, Scott Possessor, right here on LI News Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Radio Jobline with Scott Possessor. We are talking today about one of my pet peeves, favorite subjects. I'm a technology guy to begin with, but cybersecurity is something that has always been a very, very valuable topic here on this radio program. Everybody that listens to this show is a power computer user. There are no people that listen to this show that, in fact, many of them listen to the show itself on their computer, rather than a radio. So we've got a lot of people who are hanging on every word, making sure that they're not making the mistakes and they're not making the problems. But I think now, Frank, we're going to start talking about some of the careers that are associated with cybersecurity. Now that we'd spent the first half setting it up, so what are we talking about? What are the top careers in the cybersecurity world?
Well, as I said earlier, it's a very broad topic and there are very many different flavors of cybersecurity. The one that people tend to think about most is what we call a perimeter defense, the physical layer. It's making sure that the network is secure. It's making sure that firewalls are running properly. It's all of the physical configurations and setups of a network that need to be done to make sure it's secure. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of work to be done there.
Is that a typical network administrator?
It is oftentimes the part of that administrator's role, but in many organizations, it's a specialty. You started talking before about small business to medium business to large business. What happens as businesses get larger, they need to begin specializing, and certainly midsize and large companies will very often have separate security teams. Mm-hmm. The very large companies will have entire security operations centers where they monitor just these things, looking at traffic, looking for attacks and so forth. So it's a network side of the problem.
I'm just going to throw a quick question at you.
Sure.
So a company with, say, 500 or 1,000 employees, mm-hmm. how many people might be associated with their security?
In a company that size, I would personally say at least a half a dozen people should be focused on security.
Okay, so others the bigger the company, right? So
absolutely.
Now you go up to, say, $13 billion Henry Schein.
Yes.
With 11,000 or 14,000 employees, they need a lot more people.
Sure, because it's not just the employees. It's the breadth of the organization. Mm-hmm. Henry Schein has offices all around the world, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
They've got a global network. Mm-hmm. They've got thousands of entry points into their networks. It's a huge, huge problem.
Right.
Many large companies will have an individual designated as a chief information security officer.
Right.
Whose entire portfolio
is CISO.
They call it a CISO.
A CISO.
Yes, they love to call it, they love pronouncing acronyms.
So there's a new job right there.
That's a very big job.
Right.
A very important job. Smaller companies tend not to have that. It mm-hmm. usually becomes either one of the many jobs of the IT
CIO.
Staff
right.
Or of the CIO. It falls into different places, but
right.
it's that important that the larger companies in the country will definitely have a designated CISO.
All right, so we've got some people driving around or listening to the radio, and they're majoring in computer science right now.
Okay.
And they're thinking to themselves, I want to go into cybersecurity, but I'm not sure how to, what direction to take, you know, what steps do I take? How do people get into the field?
Well, if they're majoring in computer science, I would steer them to my favorite subtopic of cybersecurity, which is known as application security.
Mm-hmm.
So I mentioned something earlier about how if you're a business and you put your business onto the internet with an internet application that lets people do business with you, you've basically opened up a door and invited them in, and along with your customers come all of the bad guys. One of the largest attack vectors on the internet is the natural flaws in the software that enable bad actors to do bad things with your software. We all make mistakes. We can all write software that has problems in it that people learn how to exploit. The process, the task of analyzing software to figure out if it has those sorts of flaws in it and finding them and eliminating them comes under the umbrella of application security.
Mm-hmm.
That is a very challenging undertaking. There's a number of ways of approaching that. There's people who will analyze the software that you wrote in great detail to look for specific lines of code that could be exploited. There's people who will go and attack your site as if they were a bad actor to see what somebody can achieve.
Mm-hmm.
We call those penetration testers.
Mm-hmm.
Some people who are overly romantic like to call them black hat or white hat hackers.
Mm.
But it's really people who are attempting to attack your site in a friendly manner to find all the problems that the unfriendly attacker could find.
Right.
These are all under that umbrella of application security. And this is, to me, in part because I build applications,
right,
it's the most important one. The network security, the physical security is well understood.
Right.
It's well covered by tools and products that you can buy. It's still an enormous amount of work to maintain and to monitor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trivializing any of it.
Right.
But the application security is sort of the newer branch of this that has led to some of the attacks that Danielle read about before. Many of those were the result of application security problems. And the work of finding and fixing those things is really the work of trained computer scientists.
All right. So we also talked about the visual designers.
Well, now you're getting into the creating the software side.
Okay, let's talk about that.
Of this. As I said, I'm particularly fond of application security because we build applications. And there's a number of disciplines involved in creating these applications and building the software that you put out there. The security staff that we just discussed not only has a role in trying to secure software that already exists, they have a role in building the software in the first place, working with the software development team to establish procedures, establish processes to help find those problems. There are all sorts of other people involved in building software that is not necessarily rooted in computer science.
Mm-hmm.
The people who help decide what the application should look like and how it should work and how it should help users achieve their goals, those people are not necessarily programmers or
computer scientists.
They are very often rooted in the arts.
Right.
They come from backgrounds that are creative, and they become skilled at working with users and understanding how they want to achieve a goal. How do they want to work with a piece of software and finding ways to design that software so that it works well for them, works effectively for them. There are people working with them who are not necessarily designers, but who are skilled at talking to people to understand their needs, to really establish the requirements of what they do. We've got people in the company doing that work who have sociology degrees, anthropology degrees, English majors. There's an awful lot of opportunity in the process of building software that doesn't necessarily have its roots in engineering or computer science.
Okay. And there's more of these jobs. You have user experience designers.
Well, that's kind of what I was talking before when I said that people who can speak knowledgeably to users to understand how they want to go about their work, to study the way that they do things or to understand what their goals would be.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about helping to map out the user's journey. What are they going to try to achieve with your product?
Right.
And designing that flow of activity is what we call user experience design, which is a different flavor than the visual design. The visual designers and the user experience designers work very closely together to create something that is visually compelling, attractive, fun to use, and also productive and helps people get the job done with minimal frustration.
So if you were to go on Indeed or CareerBuilder now, and search for visual designers or user experience designers. Are these jobs out there now?
Tons of them.
Right now?
Tons of them. The people with these abilities are actually in very high demand because, in part, as the industry has matured and grown, developers of software have gained a real appreciation for the importance of those disciplines. We certainly have. Mm. 5 years ago, we didn't have people like that on staff. Now we've got a pretty sizable staff of user experience designers and visual designers and other people who help figure these things out. Mm. So yes, you would find many. It comes under many names. One of the challenges in doing these searches is different people call these things different things.
Oh, it's an alphabet.
User interface designers, user experience designers, graphic designers, visual designers. You kind of have to, you know, refine your searches and look for everything.
Right.
But there are many positions out there.
Okay. That are all in the same area. Now, all of these smartphone apps that are being created now, there was an explosion of them about in the last 10 years. Has that slowed down at all, or apps still being created at the same pace they were?
They are, but in a different way. The first wave of those things were all apps that were sort of products unto themselves, tons of games, little productivity tools, things that you could download and pay 99 cents for or $1.29 for. There's still plenty of those coming out. But the balance has shifted towards businesses incorporating a mobile experience as part of their larger digital presence.
Right.
If you look around with the companies that you do business with every day without even maybe thinking about it, Amazon, your bank, your credit card company, Southwest Airlines, without even thinking about it, you might start a reservation at your desktop, save it, get in your car, go home, take your iPad out and finish the reservation. And then when you get to the airport, you check in on your phone. You view that as one seamless relationship with Southwest Airlines, a digital relationship. A mobile app is just part of that. So if you were to wade through the Apple App Store today, I have no real data, but you'd find a substantial percentage of those apps are things that you download for free because they are part of a larger relationship with some business that you want to do business with.
Mm. And then I don't like when they sort of add a little cost after you've downloaded the app. I remember that happened to me with Angry Birds. I know it's a very silly game, but I used to play it on the train, and all of a sudden I ran out of things, and it said, well, for $1.99, you can buy one.
Yeah,
and I'm like, no, I didn't want to do that.
Software developers got to eat too.
I know.
And you know, that's called in-app purchases, and it's a natural outgrowth of you know, sort of engaging you either with a free app or a 99-cent app, and once you get really into it and really good at it, offering you other ways of buying things. The world is full of that, and that's just a natural way of keeping the business afloat.
Okay, so let's go back to the students listening to the show today.
Sure.
So are there any particular courses or areas of specialization they should be a little bit more focused on than perhaps they are?
Areas of specialization.
I'll give you an example.
Sure.
Just take a regular computer science
grad,
just an undergraduate degree in computer science. He's qualified for some jobs.
Yes.
Not all, right? So what other courses or training can a person get to push them a little deeper into this cybersecurity world or app development world?
Okay, there's two answers to that. If they have an interest in a very specific realm like cybersecurity, there are plenty of courses that can be taken to dig deeper into that, whether in the university that they're attending or outside of the university. There are specific certifications that you can get in many of the different cybersecurity disciplines. For the network security person, there's something called the CISSP. There's
CNA,
other ones for
right.
CNA. There's other ones for the application security domain that I was talking about. Very specific, very technical things that one can pursue to get deeper into that. And I would encourage that because they're very important. As far as other things, recommendations I very often make to computer science students, I do a lot of work at Stony Brook and at other schools. I'm doing some work with Adelphi as well. I will recommend that they use their electives wisely. And if they're interested in the broader just application development activity, not so much specifically security, but they want to just write really awesome applications like the ones they use every day, take an anthropology course.
Right.
Take a sociology course. Take a psych course. Learn how people and societies and cultures think and operate and grow, because you will use that understanding in creating software for actual human people.
All right. Now, I would be remiss if we did this show and I didn't bring up social media.
Okay.
Because social media, I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. I mean, I remember when it really first sort of began, maybe I'm going to say 10, 12 years ago, when Twitter was still in its infancy. People didn't even know if Twitter was still going to stick around.
I don't know.
Well, for a little while, it was very dicey for them. And I'm going back again, 7, 8 years, but now look at what Twitter is and look at what Facebook is. So they've come so far. Is there any slowing down of these social media platforms, developing? And you got the new one, Snapchat is a little newer than some of the other ones. It just seems like there's a never-ending supply of this, and that's going to create a never-ending need for new people to develop these things and a never-ending need for people to secure them.
Absolutely. Is it slowing down? I don't think so. It's broadening.
Okay.
Notwithstanding the social part of social networking and the politics and whatever is involved in that, the ability to interact with other people in the world can be incredibly valuable to businesses in general. The social aspect of selling products has gotten huge. Reviews on Amazon. If I shop for anything, pretty much the first place I go is I find that on Amazon and read the reviews. That's a form of social networking, social media. It's not as visible as Twitter. It's not as noticeable as that, but it's a form of social media. Anybody building software or products or businesses in the digital age with a digital presence should be considering the social component of what they're doing, because your customers, your users, your audience will want to interact with each other whether you help them or not. If you help them and make it part of your overall presence, that's a good thing. If you don't help them and they resort to going on to either Reddit or Twitter or whatever to talk about you, very often they're only going to say bad things about you, because the people who would say good things about you won't bother.
Right. It seems for a while that it's a great way to communicate with your customer base, not unlike the way Trump communicates with his base.
Right.
Okay. But I haven't seen the revenue coming from it that I think the application developers would like to be seeing, or the people that are in charge of LinkedIn are they making the money? Is it all coming from advertising? Is all this working? That's my question. Is social media advancing society? Is it draining society? What's happening?
I don't personally think it's advancing society. Social media in the context of the big 4, 5, 6 or whatever we're talking about, Facebook, Twitter, all those things, I don't think they particularly advance society. I think the underlying concept of being able to communicate broadly could be a good thing, and oftentimes is used in a good way. From a business perspective, I don't know. I mean, there's obviously people figure out how to make money from anything. For an average business to find out a way to really capitalize upon social media is hard.
Well, our business, Frank, staffing. We've got LinkedIn Recruiter.
Yep,
I can set up a cauldron of I need a person to be living in Detroit, Michigan, or within 50 miles of Detroit, Michigan. He's got to have this skill set. He's got to have this degree. He's got to have this amount of experience. And boom, up come 61 candidates that fit all those parameters.
So it works for you.
I don't think staffing ever expected to have something like LinkedIn Recruiter that would be so fabulous, because us recruiters, if we don't have the name, how are we supposed to call you? You know, when we were kids, we used to run little scams, like pretend we were sending out invitations to a Christmas party to get names.
I think we call that social engineering. You called it earlier.
Well, it wasn't easy to do, but now it has made it so easy to find candidates. So there it's worked.
Personally find LinkedIn to be the only useful social network that I happen to subscribe to.
Right. I am not even on Facebook. And I believe my trustee Danielle is going to build us a Facebook page. We're going to monitor it, because like you said, people only say the bad things.
Yeah.
So if people call up and say, oh, you know, your guest was monotone and didn't sound like he knew what he was talking about, I don't need to hear that. You know? And so I'll have it up there for a couple of weeks, but if I don't like what I'm seeing, I'll take it back down.
Yep. That's wise. Try things out, experiment, see what works, and if it doesn't work, back out. Don't just leave it up there. So.
Yeah.
But you also mentioned the security aspect of these things, though, and that has been hugely visible in the news. Mostly for Facebook, they just keep ending up in the spotlight.
Yeah.
I think they had another one just yesterday. That's more, I think, a problem with how willing we are to share our data and our identities and our personal stuff.
Yeah, there was just something in the news this past week about they were giving out personal information or something, or listening to, was it listening to?
Oh, yes.
over like eavesdropping on emails.
Yeah, this is where technology and sociology collide. It came out that, Facebook? I mean, it happened with Google, it happened with Facebook, and it happened with Amazon. It was revealed that human contractors to Facebook have been listening or reading or transcribing messages in Facebook Messenger
to make sure that it was aligning with the artificial intelligence.
And that's why this is actually on a technical side. This is how you train artificial intelligence.
Right.
Without getting into any technical detail, artificial intelligence isn't really artificial intelligence. It's pattern recognition.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you do pattern recognition is you teach it the patterns, and after a while, it can take over on its own. So it's all about giving it data that you know is true, so that it can then go and use that to compare against other stuff.
What is the user supposed to think? We only have 30 seconds, Frank. What is the user supposed to think when he finds out all of his emails have been read by a real human?
That's a personal thought. You know, I just always assumed it was happening because I know how this stuff works, and I just sort of shrug my shoulders and say, well, this is the price I pay for being able to send an email.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm a little bit cynical. Other users should be like, really?
All right.
You're doing what?
Very quickly, Frank, give your website.
www.avi.com.
All right. And if people are looking for application development, they can contact
Slash
you.
Careers. It's right on there.
All right.
Or if
and
they're looking for application.
For jobs.
I'm sorry, jobs. Yes, I went straight to the jobs because that's what this is all about. But if they need help building an application, give us a call.
One more time.
www.avi.com for Applied Visions, Inc.
Okay. Thank you so much, Frank, for being here with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Danielle,
I really enjoyed this.
Welcome to Radio Jobline. It's been fabulous to have you. It was only your first show. You're going to get so much better as we go. And you were good today.
You did great.
Thank you.
See you next week, everybody. Happy hunting.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.